Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, August 17th, 2022. I'm on your host, Blessing Adioye Jr. Joining me is the force that is Gary Whitta.
Whitta Wednesday, actually on a Wednesday. What the hell is going on?
Welcome back, Gary.
It's very confusing to me to have Whitta Wednesday on a Wednesday. This is not how it's supposed to be.
How's it feel? When was the last time you were actually on a Wednesday? Do you remember?
I don't know. I've just done Tuesday. It's been Tuesdays forever. But this is the new regime, right? Greg called me up and explained to me that there was going to be some changes at Kinda Funny, and instead of me just doing the regular Tuesday slot, I would just kind of like be the designated, you know, substitute for whenever you guys need a, you know, need a spot filling. So that's how we're doing it now. Sometimes Widow Wednesdays might be on a Wednesday, might be on a Tuesdays. You could have Widow Wednesday on a Thursday or a Friday or a Monday.
Basically, the new regime is that you get Gary Widow whenever, right? Like, we don't have
you never know when I'm going to pop up. I kind of like that, you know, the unpredictability of it. Like, knowing that I'm going to be on a Tuesday, fair enough, but that's predictable. Like, I kind of like the idea of, like, you never know, like, I'm going to pop up and surprise you.
And now,
except you publish the schedule in advance, so some people will know.
Yeah, but, like, the schedule never keeps is the thing.
Right.
We always publish the schedule, and then at least two or three of those days end up changing in terms of hosts. But, like, now, Widow Wednesdays are what? Xcast? Because Xcast has moved up. Right?
So we record
on Tuesday.
That's the other change.
On Wednesday.
We used to record Xcast on a Friday and post it on a Saturday morning. Now we record it on a Tuesday. So I just recorded the most recent one yesterday, and that goes up on a Wednesday. So that'll be up if it's not already up today.
Gary, how you been? What you been playing?
I got to tell you, it is all about, and this is actually the first time I've had an opportunity to talk about it on a podcast. I've been tweeting about it a lot, but I am obsessed with Cult of the Lamb. I think it's going to be on my short list. It's a very strong contender for my game of the year. I don't know how many hours I've got into it. I like this part, like, started playing Friday and pretty much every spare minute I had through the weekend, it was just all Cult of the Lamb. And I've had to put it down for a couple of days because I've been really busy. But you know, one of those games.
Steam Deck?
No, I'm playing it on Xbox.
Because
I'm playing, it looks beautiful on a big, because it's got such a beautiful art style and the colors are very vibrant. It looks beautiful on my OLED TV. Absolutely love the way it looks. And you know what it's like. We've all been there. It's one of those games that, like, even when you're not playing it, you're thinking about it. Like, you wake up in the morning thinking, when can I play it today? I've got, like, some tasks I need to do. Like, I really want to, like, upgrade my shrine, and, like, you're just thinking the game kind of, like, gets under your skin even when you're not playing it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's one that I want to pick up more of. I played it during the preview. I played about 6 hours, and I really enjoyed it, but it was the thing of, oh, man, I like this. This is good, but is it going to be for me? Because it's a lot of sim stuff compared to the roguelite stuff, and I'm in for the roguelite stuff. The sim stuff is more of an acquired taste. Hearing Greg talk about it, hearing other folks at KF talk about it, and, like, seeing the Twitter reaction to it, I'm planning on making time to get into it and, like, play more of it before the end of the year, because it seems like one that people keep bringing up in the game of the year sense. And I think it's exciting, because I feel like there's a lot of different, we've been talking about this quite a bit, a lot of different indie games that have been coming through and killing it this year. I feel like
great
this year
for indies, absolutely.
Yeah, this year is, like, the year of the indie when you're talking about what's coming up in the big conversations, right? Like, when you bring up AAA games, it is Elden Ring, it's Horizon, right? But then you
it'll be God of War by the end of the year, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be God of War by the end of the year. But then you immediately get into, oh yeah, but Sifu. Oh yeah, but Neon White. Oh yeah, but,
right?
You know, for a lot of people, Stray, right? For
right?
a lot of people,
Cult
As
of the Lamb.
Falls,
yeah.
Cult of the Lamb.
I think this is probably, it's an interesting conversation to have, like, separate just from Cult of the Lamb itself. It's like, this might be the year, and indies have been strong for years, right? Indies came back in a big way years ago, and they've always been a big part of the scene. This might be the first year in a while where you could really, I think, with some authority, say this was a better year for indies than it was for AAA. This was a year that was more defined by good indies than it was for AAA. Just because it's just the calendar, just the planets just lined up in such a way that it was really strong for indies and the big AAA games, because so many have slipped, are kind of having a bit of a quiet year.
Dude, I didn't even bring up Rollerdrome, which is one of the dopest games I've played all year.
Like, I want to try that out. Yeah.
It's so good. But yeah, that's up there too. And then I look at the games that are about to come out, right? There's this game Tinykin that looks really cool. That's a 3D platformer. And then also, I think it's called Immortality or Immortal from Sam Barlow, the developer of Her Story.
Yeah,
and Telling Lies.
Yeah, there's more to come. Yeah, indies are not done yet.
Yeah, and so, like, it's a really exciting year. And then I do think that the fall is going to pick up a bit in AAA. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, I think indies have kind of dominated it this year. And for the AAAs that I'm excited about, it's they are, like, the almost indie-level AAAs, right? Aside from, like, the God of Wars of the world. But then I look to High on Life, which is a game from, I don't even know.
From Justin Roiland, right?
Yeah.
Justin Roiland, yeah. But I think the developer is Squanch Games. And they're not indie, but they're also not AAA, right? They're, like, in that weird in-between space. But I would kind of count them in that indie conversation a bit. And then you get to the Scorns of the World and other games that feel a little bit more low-key. And, like, a Plague Tale Requiem. You know, it's a really exciting year.
It's not like a dead year for AAA. It's just, you know, because a bunch of titles slipped and because indies are so strong. I know for sure that if I have to do my, like, top five for the year at the coming, you know, even kind of extrapolating out, like, what's coming and there's a good chance, like, Saints Row could possibly blow me away. I'm looking forward to playing that. But of what I've played so far, there aren't any AAA. The only AAA game that I would put on my game of the year list so far is Kirby and Forgotten Lands, which I think is fantastic. And I think is probably going to clean up for Nintendo game of the year when they do the category.
Oh, yeah.
Specific awards. I personally think it should be in the game of the year conversation overall. It won't win anything, but it should at least be on the list.
It'll win family game.
But for me, Stray and Cult of the Lamb are probably the two top contenders. The thing I really like about Cult of the Lamb that I found so interesting from, like, a game design perspective is, I'm sure there are other examples, but off the top of my head, I was really struggling to think of other examples of a game that mashes together two completely different game genres, right? But in a way where they do feel like it's not jarring. They actually do feel like they complement one another. And it means that, you know, if you get tired of one particular, you know, I'm a bit tired of managing my village right now. I think I'll go on a crusade and you know, and do some combat. I know you come, then that gets tiring. You come back and there's always something. There's always, like, a different flavor. I personally prefer, like, the management similar way. I like, you know, oh, I need to build some more of this and more of that. Like, that's just, you know, everyone loves those kind of games. And I was like, sometimes I would put off going on Crusades because, like, the roguelike combat, like, I'm not brilliant at it. I'm playing just on the medium difficulty. But I tell you something, when I beat a boss, because the bosses aren't that difficult, which is great for me. But when I beat a boss, like, it's so exhilarating. You know, like, when you feel, I'm sure Elden Ring players know what I'm talking about. When you get into, like, a good boss battle and you just barely beat it, that feeling of, like, exhilaration, like, ah, yeah, I got you. Like, every time I beat a boss in Cult of the Lamb, I get that feeling. And it kind of energizes you to kind of keep playing. And I just love it. I think it's such a clever game. The style of it is brilliant. Just the aesthetic is really, really cool. I just think it's a little mini masterpiece. Absolutely love it.
Hell yeah. Well, Gary, enough about Cult of the Lamb. Let's talk about today's stories, which include Toys for Bob teasing a new game, Xbox teasing Death Stranding coming to Game Pass, and more, because this is Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, or bronze members or above, get to write in. And silver members or above, get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, a new Kind of Funny XCast is up right now featuring the devs of Rumbleverse. The XCast crew gets to talk to them all about what it was like making the game. You can catch that right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. Is that a fun one, Gary? Did you enjoy talking to the Rumbleverse crew?
Yeah, and I was actually the only person, because I've just been so busy, I didn't have a chance to play the game before I went on. So, you know, I tried to kind of limit my questions to just kind of like general ones about it, right? You know, Paris and Mike were able to kind of get into it more specifically because they've played it a bunch. But no, it was really, really interesting. I'm fascinated by the whole battle royale, you know, subgenre. And, you know, it was interesting to talk to them about, like, trying to make something that, you know, kind of stands out in what has become a very crowded space. It's funny because one of the questions I had from them was like, what are some of the things you wanted to do, try and differentiate yourself in Battle Royale, which is a very crowded marketplace? And they're like, well, when we started developing this game 4 years ago, it wasn't that crowded. Like, it became crowded in the time that it took them to make the game. So it was kind of interesting to see like how the landscape can kind of shift under your feet, even as you're developing a game. But I got to tell you, between talking to them about the, I didn't know that much about it going in, talking to them about it yesterday. And then I watched Greg and Mike, they teamed up last night and played some on Twitch. Between those two things, it kind of sold me on it. I want to at least give it a try. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's one that I want to try out more. I tried it out a little bit. It's funny. One of the first things that came that I thought once I booted up the game was, wow, Fortnite has had such a big influence in video games. Who would have ever thought?
I mean, look at the aesthetic, right? It's
I think I
remember the very first time they did a trailer for Rumbleverse, thinking I spent the first 30 seconds thinking this is a Fortnite trailer because it's so similar.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's very, I think it's clearly very deliberate. I mean, they're both, you know, published by Epic. It's all good. I imagine you might even see some kind of crossover event at some point, you know, where skins from one game, you know, characters from Rumbleverse appear in Fortnite and vice versa. Or maybe they'll find some way to actually do some kind of like cross play event. That would be really cool. I don't know. But you're absolutely right. When there's so many, I mean, Knockout City went for a similar aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
Like that Fortnite aesthetic has really,
I mean, even when
it's influenced a lot of people that want to try and get the same piece of that market.
And even when you want to talk about UI, right, in the menus, mm-hmm. I've been playing a lot of multiverses recently, and that's another one where as soon as you boot it up, like obviously the game is a different kind of game, but the menus and the UI is so Fortnite in a way where I'm like, wow, they really did something here, right? Like Fortnite has now had ripples in ways that have affected multitudes of games already,
sure.
Let alone I'm sure what we'll see in the next probably decade of video games. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Fargo Brady, Guy V, and The Saboteur. Today, we're brought to you by Shopify and Uplift, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have seven stories today.
A Baker's Dozen.
Starting with number one, a very exciting one. Toys for Bob is teasing a new game. This comes from Tom Ivan at VGC. Skylanders and Crash Bandicoot developer Toys for Bob could be gearing up to reveal a new game. On Tuesday, the Activision studio tweeted an image showing off 17 games it has developed and teasing a mystery 18th title. Toys for Bob is perhaps best known as the creator of Skylanders. It most recently developed 2020's Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, and 2018's Spyro Reignited Trilogy. The Novato, California-based studio has also contributed to the Overwatch, Tony Hawk's, and Call of Duty franchises, among others. Last May, Activision denied claims that Toys for Bob had suffered layoffs and said it will continue to support Crash Bandicoot 4 alongside a new role working on Call of Duty Warzone. According to several job listings currently advertised on the website, quote, Toys for Bob's experienced developers are looking for creative individuals ready to take on exciting and new projects, end quote. VGC reported late last year that Toys for Bob was potentially hiring for non-Call of Duty projects, as indicated by a listing on its internal career site. In June, it was suggested that Toys for Bob could be working on a new Crash Bandicoot game. Now, Gary, you're part of the Kind of Funny X-Cast, right? The Xbox podcast here. Activision and Toys for Bob, by extension, are now under the Xbox umbrella. That being the case, what do you think they might be teasing here?
I don't know. That's an interesting angle. Do you think?
Because here's the thing. I'm not trying to imply anything. All I can talk about is what would excite me.
Are you trying to suggest that Crash Bandicoot could come to the Xbox?
I'm trying to listen. I'm trying to suggest that these guys who have revived Crash Bandicoot, these guys who have revived Spyro, I think it could be really smart and really exciting to have them work on Banjo-Kazooie. Make a new baby.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, you know, one of the things we talk a lot about on the X-Cast, because one of the things I'm proud of about the X-Cast is I don't think of us as like, you know, platform warriors, you know, Xbox, whatever you want to call it. Like we're very, you know, we call it like we see it. Like, yeah, we're Xbox enthusiasts. I love the Xbox. That's why we do the podcast. But we don't just like blindly go, oh, Xbox better. Like, you know, when you know, the PlayStation has an edge, or we think there's something more interesting happening on the PlayStation side, or an area where Xbox needs to improve, we'll call it out. And one of the areas in which I think that is the case, as you look at the two lineups, is if you were making a choice right now between PlayStation and Xbox. I mean, I say it all the time, like 90% of the games are the same. There's a handful of you know, first party exclusives that make the difference. But to that end, if you're a big platformer, if you like kind of cutesy platformers, it's one of the areas where I think it's no contest in terms of PlayStation. Xbox doesn't really have, I don't think, a standard bearer You know, it has a standard bearer shooter. It has a standard bearer, you know, driving game. It has standard bearers in lots of different genres, but it does not have a standard bearer platformer the way that PlayStation has, like, a glut of them, right? You know, it's got got Ratchet and Clank,
it's got Spyro, it's got Astro, it's got Sackboy,
it's got Crash Bandicoot, it's got
technically it doesn't have Spyro anymore. Now I believe Spyro belongs to will belong to Xbox.
But, I mean, certainly historically, through. and even right now today, like it's the one genre where I think there's like the biggest gulf between the PlayStation offerings and the Xbox offerings. And we joke all the time about how we'd love to see Banjo-Kazooie come back. But in all seriousness, I would love to see it come back. I think it's the closest thing Xbox currently owns to, you know, something in that space. But yeah, I guess obviously now they do technically own Crash and Spyro and stuff like that. But like Banjo-Kazooie is the one that has, you know, that was born on the Xbox. It's known as an Xbox title. I think there would be a lot of fondness for it if they were.
I don't know about Banjo-Kazooie being born on the Xbox. Yeah, I feel like that's a lot of Nintendo 64 erasure right there.
Well, that's fair enough, because Rare again started on the Nintendo
and then Xbox. You know,
yes, that is true.
All right, so let's look. But like, okay, I think it's fair to say that right now, as we speak, if you're thinking about Banjo-Kazooie, you think about it being on the Xbox, right? It's not like the next. Like, look at it this way.
We've all accepted reality that
there's never going to be like another Banjo-Kazooie game like on the Switch or anything, right? That ain't happening unless they kind of put it back on like Nintendo Switch Online emulator bullshit. Oh, that reminds me, I've got to play Wave Race now. They put that on. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I feel like that of all the candidates, so if they're looking at like instead of like, you know, I guess they could just create something completely new. What a radical idea. But if they're looking at what they own and what they have, like, you know, if like Phil Spencer says, okay, look, I have looked at the situation we're in and we don't have an answer to Sony on like, where are the platform games? Let's fix that. What can we develop? What can be our platform standard bearer? I think you have to look at Banjo. It ain't fucking Conker, I'll tell you that. I think you gotta look at Banjo.
But it could be. I think that's like long-term thinking. But you know,
I mean, if Banjo was a success, I would probably go with Conker next. But like Banjo, yes. And they should call it Banjo 3E. Like, I think that would just be
100%. Banjo, that would be the thing that would get people hyped.
We all want Banjo 3E. And I think the idea of having a developer like Toys for Bob, who obviously, like, as you mentioned, have a ton of experience in this space. I to me it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's funny as you're talking, Ryan, talking about the 3D platformers that represent PlayStation, right, versus what Xbox could have. A few people in chat were saying Super Lucky's Tale, to which
no.
I feel like that's more of an indicator of like where the vast gap
the
is
gap.
Between
yeah.
fucking
yeah,
Oculus port.
Between that and other platforms. Like Super Lucky's, ask any kid on the street who Super Lucky's Tale is. Like any kid on the street, most of them will not be able to tell you who the fuck.
And listen,
there's going to be one who's like, I've got a 3D platformer at home, and the 3D platformer at home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we have 3D platforming at home, and then that, you know, it is the bullshit game. To be fair, I've played Super Lucky's Tale, and it's actually not that bad. There's just nothing about it like that's gonna ascend it to that level that, you know, when you think of like top tier platformers. Is this a good piece of game design? Is this a competent platformer that you'll enjoy playing? Yes. But like in this age of like character, ever since Mario, right? You say in this age, it's always been this way. Mm-hmm. Like the character is central to the platformer, right? Whether it's Mario or Sonic or Crash or fucking Bubsy or Lucky's Tale or Banjo or Conker, you name it. Those games are all based around characters and personality. Yeah. And who is the character? Like Crash was entirely built off the idea of like, here's a character with attitude, right? The Poochie of video games, essentially. Sonic was built all around that. Like, here's like a cool character in a cool world. And, you know, the game was almost secondary to that. So it's almost like, who's the cool character first? And I've always thought that, remember when Banjo-Kazooie showed up in Smash Bros? There was a ton of excitement about that. And I think it speaks to the undercurrent of fondness that is there. I do think it's something that Xbox need to address. Again, if you look at the two lineups, Xbox and PlayStation, I think, have got very similar, like, you're not going to be unhappy on either platform, right? There's plenty of games and lots of great stuff. Except if a big priority for you is platforming and those kind of cutesy platformers and games you can play with your kids that are in that vein, PlayStation wins it hands down. It's an area where I think Microsoft really lags behind, and they need to play some catch up.
I think it's important for the all ages aspect too, right? When I remember leading into the launch of the PS5, one of the things that I kept touting was, oh yeah, they're gonna reveal a Knack at some point, because they gotta have something for the families, you know, like gaming is a thing that's for everybody, and being able to hit on all aspects, that's where you're gonna bring an audience in. Nintendo was so successful because they have such a great offering of games that can appeal to the whole family. In fact, they focus in on the younger audience, and they're very successful doing it. And so, like, the PlayStation launching with things like, you know, Astro's Playroom, but then also Sackboy: A Big Adventure, that's really big for PlayStation.
And by the way, Sackboy: A Big Adventure is a really good game. I think that game got slept on a little bit when it launched.
Gary, you're a man after my own heart, because I say this all the time. Like, people don't put enough respect on Sackboy: A Big Adventure. That was a really fun video game.
And but it's then, polished, and it's so, like, there's so much love and they got the work that went into that game. Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, I was playing it thinking, oh, my God, what did they pay for this soundtrack, right? Because it's a ton of, like, bangers, like, pop, you know, hits that they have in that soundtrack. Just beautifully made game. I actually bought an extra DualSense controller. I have no need in this house for three DualSense controllers, except we bought one so that all three of us in the house, my wife and my kid, could all play Sackboy together. We had a great time.
But yeah, then following that up with one of your biggest exclusives in that post-launch year being Ratchet & Clank.
What a game.
I think that's PlayStation understanding the different sects of their audience that they need to hit, and doing it very successfully. I think if Xbox could have that same level of range of, hey, we have the Gears of War and the Halos for the hardcore shooters out there. We got the Skyrims, or like I should say Elder Scrolls, right? Or the big Western RPGs for the nerds out there, right? But we also have the Banjo-Kazooies or the Crashes or the Spyros or the Psychonauts, right? Like, They do have, right? And Psychonauts 2 was, you know, cross-platform, but I think now that they have Double Fine in their pocket, in the future they can continue to have those things be exclusive to the platform. I think you're able to paint a better picture of characters across the platform in the way that Nintendo is the kings of, and Sony at this point is getting really good at, right? When you're talking about the, you know, the Horizons, the Spider-Man, the Jin Sakais from Ghost of Tsushima's, but then also the Sackboys, the Astrobots, you know, I know we don't talk about Sly Cooper as much, but I guess the Slys, right? The Ratchets. You know, if Xbox is able to paint that same level of painting of, here are the characters that we have in our system that represent our platform that you see and you identify with, and it can be a Banjo, Crash, Spyro. That's a really strong.
That is an area where I really do think Xbox does have work to do. Because again, if you look at characters, right? If you look at things you can relate to, not just game types, but when they do their little, you know, when like PlayStation Studios comes up and all the, it's almost like the Marvel logo where you get like little glimpses of all the characters. They have, you know, Kratos, they have Joel and Ellie, right? They have Nathan Drake, they have Ratchet and Clank. They have all these great, not just great games, but great characters that you can relate to. I don't think Xbox really has that. I don't think Master Chief is a character anyone can really relate to. He's a cypher, he's a guy behind a fucking helmet. Like, where am I going? Like, that's not a character. Like, I don't find that interesting. And you know, Horizon isn't character based, like Gears of War, Marcus Fenix maybe, but like these, it's, to me it's all like second string stuff. Like I really feel like that's actually, this is a bigger conversation, but it's not just that Microsoft needs to plug a gap with certain types of games, which they do, like in like family friendly platformers they got very little. But I actually think, like, I think I slightly prefer Sony's strategy of building a big roster of games around characters. Like, as soon as you see Kratos, like, you fucking know. Right.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like that's something that Microsoft would be well advised to try and develop more of, like not just memorable games, but memorable games built around characters, characters that everyone relates to. Oh, I love Joel and Ellie. I love Kratos. You know, I love Nathan Drake. Like, we all, part of the reason we love those games is they have great characters. Same reason we love great movies and TV shows, right? They have great characters at the center of them. I don't think that for whatever reason that's not been a big part of the Microsoft strategy, but I personally prefer the Sony way of doing things.
Yeah. Really quick, I have a question, bringing it back to Toys for Bob. How likely is it that it's actually Banjo, though? Because this deal, I think, from what I understand, still hasn't gone through.
That's actually where I was going to take it.
Okay, cool.
And like me bringing up Banjo is more so of a, this is what I think they should do, and this is what I think they will eventually do, right? Like, right now, all we're getting from Toys for Bob is that image with the question marks on the 18th game, right? It is Spyro Reignited Trilogy was our 16th game. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time was number 17. And now number 18, we're working on it, right? I think eventually a Banjo will make it in there, but I do think that if I had to read the tea leaves or if I had to make an actual guess on what they're working on here, I'll say it's probably the next Spyro. I think it's the new Spyro game, Spyro 4, or whatever they decide to call it. But it will be in the same vein of as Crash Bandicoot. That'd be my guess. Are you all down for that? We want a new Spyro?
I'm just agreeing with you.
I would prefer Crash. I'm not as big of a Spyro fan, and Crash 4 was so good. So I would just like want more of what they did with Crash 4, but you know, give the Spyro fans some love. I'm done.
Yeah, because I like Spyro more than Crash, but I respect Crash. I think people love Crash 4, and I believe them that Crash 4 is a good game. A new Spyro would be the one to get me in. That's what I want.
Man, I don't know if there was never another Spyro game, I wouldn't lose a minute's sleep over it.
Really? Oh man, I love me some Spyro, Barry. Man. I love me some Spyro. But enough about that. Let's hop into story number two. Is Death Stranding coming to Game Pass? ? I asked this because yesterday morning, actually, like right after we did KGD, at Xbox Game Pass PC, the verified Twitter account, tweeted out, "Sometimes we just like a good landscape picture. # new profile pic." Now, that might seem innocent. That might seem like nothing. But if you then full screen their profile picture and then enhance, it looks like it's Death Stranding. Like, Barry,
where's this tweet? I'm gonna go look at it. Point me to this tweet.
At Xbox Game Pass PC.
I'm also showing it on the Discord there.
Oh, Barry. Okay. Let me pull it.
So like, if you look at the Barry, are you able to click into the profile? Okay. Maybe full screen the profile picture. Like.
Oh, so you're saying that's a landscape from the world of Death Stranding?
Yes, 100%.
100%. There's no chance that's some other game.
Yes, 100. Okay. Like, I mean, go back to the picture again, Barrett. Because I'm pretty sure I've walked across this landscape. This looks like the opening landscape in the first area
it
of the game.
It does. I mean, this looks like Timefall.
This
is part of what put me off the game is when I first started playing is this shitty, dreary, bleak fucking landscape. I found it depressing. I mean, like, there's no they wouldn't do a tweet and make a point of changing their profile pic unless they were trying to draw your attention to something that they thought was cool, right? So.
Oh, yeah. And then, Barry, if you're able to look at the
replies. Here we go. Here we go. Oh, so, I was going to say, when some internet detectives put it together, right?
Yeah. And so, this is cool. Like, it's interesting because Death Stranding has been released on PC, right? PlayStation published game on PlayStation platforms. 505 Game publishes it on PC. I think on Steam or Epic, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. I don't think it's on the Xbox PC store, but I guess this would be confirmation that it's coming. Which is dope, which also means that, hey, could we get Death Stranding on Xbox? I mean, Kojima's working on a game for Xbox. Like, is that going to happen? I would imagine so.
Well, I mean, educate me here. What is the nature? Death Stranding's not like a first-party Sony game, right? It's a third-party game that was exclusive to PlayStation initially.
Gary,
is that correct?
You're asking a lot of questions right now that I don't think even.
I mean,
is that
a difficult question
to
answer, though? Nobody knows.
It was published as a first party game. It is historically what would be called a second party game because it was a third party made thing that was published by the first party. But yeah, Death Stranding, when it came to PlayStation, was published as a first party thing. But then when it came to PC, 505 took it over for whatever reason, right? That's somewhere in the contract that none of us have access to. Of why that happened.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're not going to see Death Stranding on the Xbox anytime. I mean, like, even in the wacky world that we live in where MLB The Show can come to Xbox and actually be a better proposition on Xbox because it's on Game Pass. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point, anything. Like, there was a parody article that came out today on Twitter. The headline was Xbox announces that all Game Pass users will be receiving a free actual dog. Like a puppy that they'll just send you. And I'm like, it took me a second to go, oh, I don't know, maybe fucking Game Pass. You just never know these days. So who the hell knows? But my guess is like Death Stranding, which is already on PC, coming to Game Pass sounds like not that much of a leap at all. An Xbox version sound, that's a very different proposition.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
It being under the Xbox branding name, I would have thought would have been enough for PlayStation to be like, no. Because if I remember correctly, and again, this is all, you know, contractual IP ownership stuff that can get gray and messy. But I believe Sony does own Death Stranding. Like, if a new Death Stranding is getting made, it's being made under Sony. That being the case, I would be shocked that I am shocked that they're allowing this to happen under the like an Xbox branded thing. And I don't think that if it's gone that far for that to happen, then I wonder along the lines like, hey, 505 just published Death Stranding on Xbox.
I mean, it's like I said, the day I heard about that, my life before I heard that MLB The Show was coming to Xbox Game Pass, and my life after. And like once that happened, I felt like we crossed some kind of Rubicon where like just who the fuck knows what can happen next. Like, I mean, would anybody have bet on that? If I'd have said to you like a week or a month before MLB The Show was announced for Game Pass, if I'd have pitched that on the show, you would have laughed at me, right?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Okay. And yet it happened. So who the fuck knows?
Chat brought that up. I think Corey Cudney brought that up. And my response to that, though, is like MLB forced Sony's hand, because it's not like Sony owns the MLB.
Right.
They just licensed that IP out to them, essentially, right?
It's probably there in spite of Sony's approval, right?
Not 100%. Oh, yeah. MLB was like, we see the success of Game Pass. Like, I think this was like stuff that was coming out as that news story was breaking of it coming to other consoles, not just Xbox, but also Switch and stuff. And so, because Death Stranding, it seems, I think Nano was saying that Sony does own the IP of Death Stranding, then they have more control there. But if it's something where, you know, they allow the publishing to be 505 on PC, then
You're not going to see Death Stranding on Xbox any more than you would see Uncharted or The Last of Us on Xbox. If Sony completely controls it, why would they give come to Sony, the only place where you can play this and that. Like, why would they give that
up? But like, why would they put it on Xbox Game Pass on PC? Like, that's
PC
where
is kind of different. PC's weird.
PC is different, but Xbox Game Pass on PC? I don't know, man. That, for me, that's like, okay, somebody has more control over the other. Like, maybe Sony doesn't have complete say over what's happening with Death Stranding. That's kind of where because we just a week ago, I want to say, we were talking about how PlayStation legit blocks games from coming to Game Pass, right? And like, that's business, right? That's marketing. That's how all the stuff works. But like, they care about Game Pass. Like, it's not just Xbox they care about. They care about games coming to Game Pass. They're willing to fight to not have games come to Game Pass. The fact that Death Stranding is coming to Game Pass, I feel like says something.
Somebody, I this is just internet bullshit, and I don't know the source of it at all. But like, in the same way, you can go both ways, right? For example, when Fall Guys launched, it was exclusive to Sony, and it was on PlayStation Plus, right? And the reason for that was, and I remember Phil Spencer like told me this directly, is because Sony fucking paid them a shitload of money, right? Paid Mediatonic a shitload of money to have it be a PlayStation exclusive and have it be on PlayStation Plus. And that may be part of the reason why it took so long for it to come to other formats, because they had to wait for that deal to expire. In the same way, I think Sony, you can also go the other way, right? Which is like, you can incentivize developers. Somebody told me that one of the reasons why I was complaining the other day about how Cult of the Lamb's not on Game Pass, because Game Pass has created this terrible, like the dark side of Game Pass has created this kind of entitlement mentality, where we're so used to like all the games we want being on Game Pass, and when one falls outside of that, and you're like, wait, I've got to go to the store and fucking buy this? Fuck is that? Like, you just, you're not used to it, because we're so spoiled by Game Pass. Mm-hmm. And when I was like, I went to Game Pass, go, oh, Cult of the Lamb, I hear it's good, I want to play it. Let's see if it's on Game Pass. And it's not. I was like, oh, I got to go buy it, which I was happy to do. But still, you have that little moment of like, oh, it's not on Game Pass, because Game Pass is becoming the norm. Somebody told me that part of the reason why it's not on Game Pass is Sony paid them not to put it on Game Pass, as they will incentivize you to not do any additional, you know, subscriber deals or whatever with competing platforms, because they think they know that if it's on Game Pass, again, if you've got both platforms, and I think probably most people don't, right? But for the people that do, if you've got to make a choice between, you know, this is why the Activision, you know, Call of Duty deal is such a big deal, right? Even if it's going to continue to be on PlayStation, if you've got both consoles and you've got a choice between paying $70 for it on PlayStation or getting it essentially for free as part of the Game Pass subscription you've already paid for, no brainer, right? And so, and that's true of every game that comes out. If it's a multi-platform game and it's on, and it goes the other way as well. Let's say you had to buy a game a la carte on Xbox, but you can get it as part of like PlayStation Plus Super Extra Duper Essential Plus Premium or whatever the fuck they call those different tiers, you're going to go there as well. Like, you're going to go where the best value is, because the games are roughly the same, right? They perform the same. It's not a big difference between these third-party titles on one platform or another. And so you're going to go to the platform where you've essentially already paid for it. So it's interesting to see that there is this, if it's true, to see that there are now these kind of, you know, money trucks being pulled out, not just to get your game, to put your game on your subscriber platform, but to actually keep it off the subscriber platforms of your competitors.
Regardless, everybody should check out Death Stranding. It's a very brilliant game. If you have PC, if you got Game Pass, definitely give it a try. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but if it is your cup of tea, it'll be a real hot cup of tea. You will enjoy that tea. And so check out Death Stranding on Game Pass if you get the chance. For now, though, let me tell you about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where you can go and get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify, who powers all of the merch on kindoffunny.com/store. Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify gives entrepreneurs the resources once reserved for big business, so upstarts, startups, and established businesses alike can sell everywhere. Shopify powers millions of businesses from first sale to full scale, including Kinda Funny and Rooster Teeth. Shopify has thousands of integrations and third-party apps, from on-demand printing to accounting to advanced chatbots and beyond. I love how Shopify has the tools and resources that make it easy for any business to succeed, from down the street to around the globe. Go to shopify.com/kfgames, that's all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Again, that is shopify.com/kfgames. Grow your business with Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/kfgames right now. Shopify.com/KF Games. Now, Andy, take it away.
Shout out to Uplift for sponsoring this episode. I've been using my Uplift desk for well over a year now. I love the thing so much, I decided to write a rap song for them.
The build quality is real good. It's made of real high quality wood.
They didn't ask for it. I just did it anyway. Getting my Uplift desk immediately improved my mood. Whenever I'm on shows, I'm standing up, I'm feeling a lot more energetic. And also, I kind of feel like I was just maybe creating some bad habits sitting down at a desk all day. I would move my legs up, I'd sit underneath my legs on my chair, and eventually all that stuff just created really bad back pain for me. Choose from laminate, whiteboard, bamboo, solid wood, butcher block, or even custom solid wood or laminate options. Uplift Desk won New York Times Wirecutter's Best Standing Desk from 2019 to 2022. And while I'm at it, I'm just gonna give them an award as well. Best standing desk that I use in my bedroom from when they sent it to me until now. Uplift Desk have a 15-year warranty. They ship the same day you order with free shipping and free return shipping. So if you've been feeling the effects of sitting at a desk for 8 hours a day, maybe you want some more energy in your life, maybe you wanna do squats in the middle of a Zoom call or something, uplift your life. Go to kindoffunny.com/uplift.
Story number three goes out to Barrett. Gotham Knights has gone gold. This is tweeted directly from their Twitter account at WB Games. MTL stands for Montreal. They tweeted out the first half of the tweet in French. I don't know if you want me to read the French part. I'll just read the English part for you. The whole Gotham Knights team is proud to announce that we've officially gone gold. See you in October.
I imagine it's the exciting. French part is English part.
Can you read it in French?
The French part is for sure just the English part. I can try the French. I took lot of French. Okay. Toute l'équipe de Gotham Knights est fière de vous annoncer que nous sommes officiellement gold. On se retrouve en octobre. I definitely butchered a lot of it.
I think the psalm is, I think the S is supposed to be silent at the psalm. End there. I also took French, but I didn't have a great French teacher, I'm going to be honest, in high school.
I was actually a little bit aroused by that.
Oh, thank you, wow. Gary. I'm gonna learn some more French. If that's the response I'm getting, I'm going all the way, man. Omelette du fromage.
I think you should go back and like double down on the French and speak more French.
I mean, I can try, Gary. Gary, is Gotham Knights, does that excite you?
Potentially. I mean, I do like that kind of game. I loved the Spider-Man games, and this is a similar kind of thing, like the 360 combat and roaming around the city and superheroes and stuff. I just worry that it's gonna, based on some of the little clips that I saw of combat, it kind of feels a bit to me like I got the impression like, yeah, I see what you're doing, you want to be in that club with Spider-Man and the Arkham games, but it feels a little bit not quite the A-list version of that. Do you know what I mean? Like, just not quite as good. I don't know. That it's hard to tell from a video, but that was just the sense that I got. Like, second string DC heroes, like, maybe kind of like a second string. I think I said the other day it feels more like a CW show than like a big cinematic, you know, DC movie. I don't know.
Barrett, where are you at? You're the big Batman Arkham person here. I know it's up and downs with this game. Every single time you get a new trailer, you use the content for it. Where are you at right now?
I worry about, you know, how the gameplay is going to feel. They've talked about, like, you know, we've even seen right from gameplay reveals from, like, IGN First and stuff that it's definitely not going to be Arkham combat. It's going to be a little bit more RPG focused, and there will be characters that may control a little bit closer to Batman, right? Like, they've teased that with Batgirl and stuff. And so, yeah, like, I'm kind of up and down there. But then the news story that broke, like, last week, I think also on an IGN First, about how WB Montreal, like, have gone back in 400 years in their Gotham City to, like, kind of, like, lay out what the history of the Gotham City that they're building is. And I talked about, like, because they're tackling the Court of Owls, that's almost necessary for them to do. But I still think that's cool that they're taking, like, the extra steps there to make sure that they're doing their version of the Court of Owls and Gotham City right. And so, like, on a story level, I am still excited because, like I say, for Arkham Origins, right, that open world was it felt very uninspired. It felt like Arkham City again, but I think the story is very strong. So if we get a kind of repeat of that, like, it'll be okay. It'll be a solid 7, you know, kind of like how a lot of people saw Arkham Origins. And the people who are like, nah, it's going to be a 4 out of 10 game, I don't know, maybe you should look at other actual 4 out of 10 games.
It might be very good, like, on its own merits. The problem that I have is, like, no game exists in a vacuum, right? And for me, the high watermark, the gold standard, is Spider-Man and Miles Morales, right? Like, the combat in those games and the traversal in those games is, like, as good as you can possibly imagine it being. Like, swinging around the city feels amazing.
Worm, just so you know.
Listen, the racking up
about Spider-Man and Batman.
Racking up.
That I don't know.
Really,
is there
seriously a debate about Spider-Man? Yeah. Who's on the dissenting side of that argument?
Me.
Really?
I like the Spider-Man games more than the Arkham games. I think they're clearly better, but not everybody agrees. In fact, 50% of people disagree on the internet, apparently.
That's wacky. I mean, for me personally, the Spider-Man games, all I'm saying is, the last game that I played like this was Miles Morales, and then before that, Spider-Man. And the two things that define these types of games, which Gotham Knights is clearly an entry into this same genre, free roam traversal around the city, and kind of 360-degree combat against, like, packs of enemies at a time and kind of building up combos and stringing together moves. Spider-Man does that so well that I can't just, like, forget that. And if I go play a game that's similar to it but not as good, it's going to suffer in comparison. That's my only point.
Yeah. And honestly, like, you know, regardless of, like, our back and forth debates on Arkham versus Spider-Man, right? Like, I think Gotham Knights kind of exists in a bucket of its own where, even compared to other Arkham games, it seems like it's lacking. And that's just from the trailers of, like, seeing gameplay and stuff. I'm actually excited for the Court of Owls story. Hearing Barrett talk about it, hearing Timur talk about it, and other people that like Batman and read the Batman comics, it sounds like a really interesting narrative. And, you know, them doing the whole Batman is dead thing that I do not believe for a second. I'm like, I'm excited to see where they take that stuff.
Said, like, the game will start with him dead and the game will end with him dead. And so now I'm convinced that they're going to revive him in the middle of the game and then he's going to die a second time.
that Lazarus pit is for sure getting put to use. But yeah, like, it's
they
one
might
that
not need
I'm,
a Lazarus pit. Who knows? Who knows?
Are there other ways to revive people in the DC world?
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, it's one that I'm anticipating, but I'm not highly anticipating. You know, like, I'm down to play it. I'm down to play with friends, especially. I think that's the thing that might bring more joy to it, if I can party up with, like, you or Barrett or my friend Yami or anybody else that's playing the game and have a good time. I think that'll be the thing that helps elevate the experience. But yeah, whenever I see gameplay of it, I'm like, oh man, this is reminding me of Avengers in terms of the RPG elements and the gear and the different characters that all seem like, I don't know, like, they're not giving me that traditional Batman Arkham action feel, right? This seems like it's being more adapted to that RPG grind 'em up style gameplay that I don't necessarily want from this kind of Batman game, but I'm not going to write it off yet. I definitely want to give it a shot at the very least.
And my last thing here is that I'm glad that the studio is doing something different. I felt like I even talked about in my Arkham Files series last year that I felt like WB Montreal was kind of put into a box, being forced to make an Arkham game, which was a series that they didn't necessarily create, which was from Rocksteady, right? So I'm glad that they're trying to do something different. I appreciate that. Will it work out in the end? It remains to be seen, but I'm glad we're not just getting Arkham again. But that's just me personally.
Story number four, Jeff Keighley, he's on Twitter. He's dropping all sorts of teases for Gamescom opening night live. We got like a handful of different teases that he's put out here all on Twitter. Let's start off with Dying Light 2, which seems like it's getting a new DLC. Barry, if you're able to pull up the tweet, I have it in the thing. You can go ahead and play the video. Jeff Keighley tweeted out, Tuesday, see the reveal of at Dying Light Game 2, it's Dying Light 2, Bloody Ties, the new DLC during Gamescom opening night live. Gary, did you get to check out Dying Light 2?
No.
So I checked it out. I beat it. I really dug it for the most part. There are a couple things I didn't dig about it, specifically the ending. But like me, Greg, and Janet, I think Mike even, we're all like genuinely surprised by how much we enjoyed this game. And like looking at the trailer for the new DLC, they don't give us much to go on off of this tease, but it is like a guy that like leans down to pick up this cool looking skull mask. And I don't know, I can be down for more Dying Light 2 content. I've not picked it up since what, February? But I can be down for more. Like I might be into playing some DLC.
Is this the one with the parkour?
Yeah.
Okay, that's the one. Yeah, I never appealed to me.
Oh, really? Well, what about it didn't appeal to you? Was it the zombies?
First of all, I'm completely zombied out. Like, there's been too many zombie games, and
write one? I thought you wrote The Walking Dead.
Yeah,
helped burn us out.
Part of the reason, I mean, that was more than 10 years ago. I can't be responsible for anything that happened more recently than that. But like, there's a whole story about why I did The Walking Dead. It's because like I got fucked up by zombie movies when I was a kid, and I thought working on it would like help me like process that and face my fear and get come out the other side. It didn't work, but you know, it was worth a try. But I just, you know, and again, that was 10 years ago. I mean, The Walking Dead was a big part of the reason why we are now where we are, right? It was such a huge success to everybody wanted. Oh, zombies are back! Like zombies, like so hot right now. Like everybody jumped in with, their game, their version of it, and we've just seen so many different takes on it. I just feel like it's like let it sit for a bit. Like maybe we'll come. The zombies will always be around. Come back to them another time. But I feel like we are. I wish that we were kind of at the tail end of the current years long zombie trend because I'm just a bit over it.
Now, does that apply to the Callisto Protocol? Because here, Jeff Keighley put out another tweet talking about how next Tuesday, brand new gameplay from Callisto Protocol will debut during opening night live. Glenn Schofield is flying all the way to Gamescom to join Jeff on stage. And Jeff also mentioned that he saw a sneak preview of the demo and is a step beyond even the Summer Game Fest footage. Does Callisto Protocol do anything for you? Of course, that's the Dead Space looking game that's coming out this winter.
Also, no, because I mean, as I've said many, many times before, I don't like horror games. The last horror game I played was Fatal Frame 2 on the PlayStation 2.
Wow.
And when I discovered to my horror, my literal horror, that game fucks with you even when it's paused, I was like, you know what? Fuck this game and fuck this genre. I don't like them. They're too scary. I
didn't know this about you, Gary. This
surprises
me.
Horror games. I don't like them. I can't watch. I scare very easily. Like I couldn't watch a horror movie. Let me ask you something. Mm-hmm. Could you sit at home on your own with the lights off and you're the only one in the house and watch like a really scary horror movie and then go to bed?
I could, but also I think that defeats the purpose of it for me. Like horror movies, I'll prefer to watch with other people just because I think that's part of the experience, right? Getting scared together, getting freaked out together. I could do it with a video game though. Like you give me a scary video game, I'll play it and like go to bed and be fine for the most part. There are certain games, usually the From Software games, that have certain levels of fucked up shit that aren't even like those aren't horror games, but they feel like horror games to me because they go far and beyond, like the gigantic hands with like 10 fingers that all look fucking freaky and shit.
Yeah,
that shit fucks me up. But something like Resident Evil or I assume like Callisto Protocol or other horror stuff generally, like I'm usually fine with.
Like the closest, like if, weirdly, I do actually enjoy watching people. Like you know how Mike and I can't remember who else was playing like the Mortuary Assistant on Kind of Funny recently. I watched some of those streams when that first came out in early access, and I found that game really scary. I can watch someone else do it because like I'm kind of at a remove, right? I'm watching someone else play the game. It's not happening to me. But like I mean, I couldn't even play Gone Home on my own at home. I had to wait for my wife to come. And that's a game that only pretends that tries to trick you into thinking it's a horror game when really it's not. But like there was a point in Gone Home where you had to go down like into this scary basement. Like, yeah, I just don't want to do it.
Now you love the quarry though, right? Like that you're
fine
with that.
But
kind
that's
of
more like tongue-in-cheek camp horror. That the quarry's not really that scary. Mm-hmm. It's more fun scary than like terrifying scary. Okay. Like the really serious horror games. I personally think that the scariest horror game is scarier than the scariest movie. I think by
I agree.
I feel 100%. Like video games, because they're interactive, because it's you, right? Because it's happening to you. The horror, like video games, are actually a better, more effective delivery mechanism for horror than movies are.
Yeah, I mean, the most scared I've been playing a video game, it goes for a couple of games. Bloodborne fucked me up. And I think part of that is you don't just have the visual horror of these weird, grotesque things fighting you and chasing you. You also have to deal with, oh, if I die, I'm losing progress. Like, there's actual stakes here. If something jumps out from a corner that I can't see and, like, attaches to me and starts sucking my blood or doing whatever the Bloodborne beasts do. You know, right. Like, that for me was terrifying. And then also, Resident Evil 2 Remake, being in that same space as Mr. X and having him follow you all throughout the building, for me, that fucks me up. Having something that is constantly chasing me that I can't take out, that, like, I have to keep moving, I have to keep dodging this thing.
I mean, that's literally the stuff of nightmares. Yeah.
Yeah. That terrifies me. I can't do that.
Yeah. I told you my story about the first time I ever tried PSVR, right? Like, years ago I think it was at Comic-Con, like before the first PSVR came out, the Sony had like a little offsite place where, like, invite only, you could go and check out PSVR. And I went over, there was me and a couple of other people. It was me, like Larry, like Major Nelson was there, and there's like a bunch of people that they were showing it to. And we put the helmets on and we tried, like, there was like an asymmetrical kind of like action game that was fun. And then we tried, like, there was the, remember like the London heist thing that they had where you were like driving and shooting, like we did that and it was really fun. And then the last one, they was like, okay, for this last one, we're not going to tell you anything about it. Like, you go in completely cold. Mm-hmm. And I kind of suspected I knew where this was going. And I was like, no, I kind of want to know what it is. Cause again, VR really, like, for me, there's like scary movies, then there's scary games, and then there's VR scary games. Like, that, fuck that. Like, I cannot do it. I'm just not wired for it. I scare way too easily. And you know what it's like? When something jumps at you out of a screen, like on a 2D panel, that's one thing. But in 3D, when there's that, when there's a sense of like true proximity, like, it's terrifying.
VR horror, and I won't do. That's the one.
Just put the helmet on. Like, well, trust me. Like, our remit is like we've been asked not to tell anyone what it is. I said if you don't at least give me some sense, I'm not putting the helmet on. And they said was it's called The Kitchen. And I'm like, that's, you got to give me more. Like, what the fuck is this thing? And they said, well, we'll tell you this much. Have you ever seen any Japanese horror? And I just fucking walked out. I just left.
I was like, no, I'm leaving. No, that's 100% the right reaction to that game.
Yeah.
And then one more from Jeff Keighley, again, teasing Gamescom Opening Night Live. He tweeted out, next Tuesday, get your first look at the gameplay of The Expanse, a Telltale game series, during Gamescom Opening Night Live. And so if you're looking forward to that Expanse game, you're going to see some gameplay there next Tuesday. We'll be live reacting to all of it. Twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. For now, let's hop into story number 5. The new Tales from the Borderlands game seemingly has a release date. This is from Wario64. This is a very, very fascinating one, right? So the new Tales from the Borderlands, which is the title of the game. I didn't realize that they're titling it like a Nintendo game. New Tales from the Borderlands, of course, was announced a little bit ago, like not too long ago, I feel like. It must have been maybe a year ago, somewhere around that. It was announced with a 2022 release date that I never believed, or release window, I should say, that I never believed. Today, the store page went up on Amazon, and if you go to Amazon, right there, it says that the game is coming out October 21st with game details and everything. Now, I want to read a bit of the description here, but before I even do, Gary, have you been keeping up with... Are you a Tales from the Borderlands person, I guess, should be my first question.
I never played Tales. I mean, I played... The only Borderlands game I played was the most... I played Borderlands 3. And I played, like, maybe a third of the way through it. And I enjoyed it for a while, and then I just kind of fell off. So I'm not, like, deep into Borderlands. I honestly can't say that I'm a Borderlands fan. Like, both that cel-shaded aesthetic and the kind of, like, almost trying too hard humor of it all... It's not my flavor. It's not my cup of tea. I think they're very well made games. They're just not for me.
So Tales from the Borderlands, I absolutely loved. Probably my favorite Telltale game. It's probably between that and the original season of Walking Dead. Really great comedy, really great writing. It honestly was the thing that really sold me on the world of Borderlands, because I liked playing the Borderlands games for the gameplay and in the shooting and co-op and stuff. Tales from the Borderlands is what made me go, oh no, I really like this world, actually. This world is actually really fun to be in. And so I when they announced this, I was looking forward to it kind of cautiously, just because, you know, Telltale is not what Telltale was anymore. And I believe the writers on this are more, they're the actual Borderlands writers. It's not like the Telltale writers writing this game. And so I want to read the product description real quick to kind of give people some like context, because we've not had big trailers for this game. We've not had reveals or anything. It's just been the announcement. So the product description reads like this. Take a stand against ruthless corporate overlords in this narrative-driven adventure. Within the perpetuality war-torn metropolis of Promethea, you'll control Anu, Octavio, and Fran on the worst day of their lives. Help these three lovable losers as they endeavor to change the world and maybe even save it. Face down a planetary invasion, a vicious vault monster, and cold-hearted capitalist in the cinematic thrill ride where what happens next is up to you. Meet a motley cast full of misfits, assassin bots, and talking guns in this race to the top. It's time to fight back against exploitation and corporate greed. It's time to make mayhem your business. Pre-order offer, blah, 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 up to October 20th, and then they get into, like, product details. But yeah, like, apparently this game is coming October 21st.
So. You can make the argument, again, I've never played one, but you could make the argument that the Tales, you know, they were a spin-off, right? The Telltale games were a spin-off. You could make an argument that the Tales of the Borderlands games are actually a better vehicle for that universe than the core Borderlands games, right? Which are like, I mean, the Borderlands, the main Borderlands games, the mainline ones, do storytelling, they do cinematics, but most of the game is running around, go kill 10 rats and I'll give you a slightly better pair of trousers, you know, and come back and do it all again. And, you know, the combat stays the same, but the numbers go up. Like, that's partly why I got bored, is because the loop was very boring for me. Eventually, after a while, it started to be like, you know, how much better can these trousers get? You know, like, they're 500 now instead of 400. Like, who fucking cares? I got bored of that very quickly. But like, for a universe that is built on characters and comedy and storytelling, a game which is story and character focused, like a Telltale game is, I think is arguably a better vehicle for the Borderlands universe than a shooter, a looter shooter.
Yeah, and I liked Tales from the Borderlands, I think partly because they got that world into the hands of different writers. This isn't me just taking away from the people who write Borderlands. I think when you're playing those games, they're definitely writing for the kind of game that they want to make, which is a game filled with, you know, dick jokes and, you know, dumb goofs and, you know, ridiculousness to really amp up this crazy world that they've created. But I don't think that writing explores that world in a way that is that deep or that interesting. And so taking that and, yeah, putting it in the hands of people that are making these choose your own adventure games that are character driven, that are able to explore the world in deeper ways than what the Borderlands games even try to do, I think really helped shine some light in terms of how good that world can be once it's in the right hands. And so I'm looking forward to this. You know, I got a lot of questions. I want to see a trailer. Maybe at Gamescom we'll get something. But it's what I'm keeping an eye on.
Listen, comedy is the hardest genre to do, and I think games are the hardest medium to do comedy in, which is why we have so, in while there are so, like, name, like, if I said to you, like, name 10 brilliant comedy films, you'd have no problem. If I said name 10 brilliant comedy TV shows, you'd have no problem. Mm-hmm. If I said you name even 5 brilliant games where, like, comedy is a big part of it, you're going to struggle. You're going to struggle because it's really hard to do. And like, even something like Borderlands, which is considered like a standard bearer, you know, you go, oh, yeah, well, Borderlands, right? That's a comedy game. But the level of humor in the comedy is, like I said, it's dick jokes and, like, slapstick character, like, stuff that worry. I mean, I'd be interested to see what the Borderlands movie is going to be like. But like that, if you took that kind of comedy and transported it into a video game or a TV show, you would consider that like the bottom level of comedy, like really base, really in your face. Like, there's no sophistication, no nuance. Like, it's like there is stuff out like Stanley Parable and stuff like that, which really does do comedy in a way that is much more nuanced and interesting and perceptive. But
I would,
like,
also say, like, any Tim Schafer game as well.
Tim Schafer is like the master of it. But do you want to be in general? Do you want, like, there are always a couple of exceptions, but do you want, for the most part, for some reason, even as video games have become much more mature and much more sophisticated and much better at storytelling and much better at doing so many of the things that things like movies and television do well, for some reason, we're really, really lagging behind in comedy. I don't know why that is.
Like, I would say that in the last decade or so, right? I'll even say, like, since 2010 or late 2000s, I feel like video game narratives have taken off and, like, gone far and beyond what they were in the eras prior. But Has there been a game as funny as Portal 2 since Portal 2?
Well, I was gonna say, it literally occurred to me, like I was talking about Stanley Parable, because I think it is a comedy game as well. But I think you've got to say, like, what's the best example ever of comedy in a video game? You'd have to say the Portal games. Nothing else even comes close. And again, that's not slapstick. That's not bullshit. That comedy is clever, and you've got to think about it. And it's all built in character and world building. And there's something going on there that is very, like, you know, because it was the old man Murray guys, right? The guys that, you know, the guys that came to that, like, knew they were funny people. They knew how to be funny in the context of a video game, because it wasn't in your face. It wasn't slapstick. It wasn't dick jokes. And but that, again, that's so few and far between. I wonder why it is that we struggle so much to make video games funny.
That's a good question. I would love to actually talk to, you know, I was gonna say I'd love to talk to video game writers. You literally are a video game writer, but we don't have enough time in this episode, I feel like, to explore that. But I would love to explore that with you sometime, Gary, because, like, I have the same exact question. Yeah, but Trover Saves the Universe is the last game I can remember dying laughing hysterically because it was so funny. But that's Justin Roiland, right? Like, that is the writer of Rick and Morty. Is that what it takes to make video games funny? Like, does it need a Justin Roiland in there?
I mean, in any genre, you know what the absolute key to comedy is, right?
It's timing.
You fucked up my joke.
Damn it.
Let's try this again.
Okay.
Pretend you don't know the answer.
Okay.
Blessing, what is the key to comedy?
I don't know, Gary. What is it?
Ask me.
What is the key timing to comedy?
Got him.
It's less funny when I've got to tee it up the second time.
I'm sorry. I'm too good at this, Gary. I'm sorry. I was ahead of you. I apologize. But I was good. That was really good. For now, let's hop into story number 6 because we're late in the show, so we got to wrap up soon. But let me tell you about Escape Academy's new patch. This comes directly from a press release that they released. It's time for an Escape Academy Summer Progress Report. Coin Crew Games, Skybound Games, and IM 8-Bit have released a new quality of life patch for Escape Academy, which adds a number of features based on student feedback. Students will now be able to toggle split screen on and off in online multiplayer. Additionally, this update also includes a new FOV slider setting, a hint confirmation button, various bug fixes, and more. The team has also released a new trailer spotlighting the grades the game has received since launch. More new features include added a hint confirmation. You now have to press the hint button twice. They added best grade information to the replay board. They increased maximum mouse sensitivity on PC. They changed the grading system to be a bit more harsh. And then they changed key difficulties ratings for some rooms to better match their actual difficulty. Good on you, Escape Academy. They're basically answering all the complaints that I had about the game, so good on you.
My wife's been enjoying that game.
Yeah? Have you been playing it with her?
No, I mean, I enjoy watching her play it, but I've mentioned before, like, my brain's not wired for puzzle solving. When I used to play the Uncharted games, I would do all the combat, and then when I got to a puzzle, I would just hand the controller to Leah, and she would solve it for me. Because I'm right-brained, so I'm just not good at puzzle solving. I'm not good at, like, logic, and I can't, like, mathematics and things like that. I collapse almost right away. And so, like, when I do solve puzzles in games, I remember every time I would solve a puzzle in Portal, I was, like, so pleased with myself, even, like, the early ones. But a lot of times I will go to the YouTube walkthrough, like, almost very quickly, because I know that I could spend another hour on the puzzle and I'm not going to get anywhere. My wife, however, loves puzzle solving. She loves puzzle games. Her brain is wired for it. And so she's been really enjoying Escape Academy a lot.
Hell yeah. Yeah, Escape Academy is one that I enjoyed quite a bit, but my biggest complaints were that when you're playing online, split screen was still active. You couldn't disable split screen, which I felt defeated a lot of the purpose of being separate people in an escape room trying to solve something together separately. And then also, like, it was so easy to hit that hint button on accident, especially in a puzzle situation where you're just trying to spam buttons or whatever. Like, I don't know, man, if I click this thing, does it do it? And then you accidentally click square and it gives you a hint. And you're like, no, I didn't want the hint. And they're fixing both of those things. I'm glad they're listening to the audience. I'm also excited for them to drop new DLC because they have a whole roadmap where they are adding, I think, 5 puzzles per season, or at least like five puzzles, I think, in the fall season and then again in the spring season, which is awesome, right? I think that's a really great way to support that game, and so I'm looking forward to that. Let's round out the Roper Report with story number 7. This girl on Tinder gets guys to buy Nier Automata and then ghost them. This comes from Josh Colson at The Gamer. Did you see this floating around, Gary?
No, what is this?
This is making the rounds actually on Twitter. There are any number of reasons why you might choose to play a particular video game. A recommendation from a friend, an ad on TV, or it's on sale and you're looking for something new to play. Or, you know, you might have been convinced to pick it up and play a copy of something by a stranger on Tinder who then ghosted you once the transaction was complete. That's how at least 22 men got into Nier Automata. Enja, and this is spotted by former The Gamer writer Cian Mayer, revealed on Twitter a short while ago that she would, quote, roam around on Tinder and get guys to buy Nier Automata, end quote. After they bought it, she'd then ghost them, leaving the proud new owners of a great game wondering what it is they did wrong. Enja clarified that she never offered anything up in return from them buying and trying what is presumably her favorite game. She would simply talk about it a lot with whoever she matched with, and Tinder being Tinder, most of those matches rushed to buy a copy of the game. As she highlights at the end of her viral tweet, quote, high sales mean more Taro games, end quote. Yoko Taro has actually learned of Enja's exploits, replying to news of the 22 additional Tinder-assisted sales with, quote, glory to mankind, end quote. I love this story.
It's kind of funny. I've been saying for ages that I've been meaning to get into Nier Automata. I have it. I just need to reinstall it on my PlayStation. So, I mean, I don't know. This is just a bit of fate. It sounds like she wasn't doing anything overt, like saying, like, oh, you know, one thing you should know about me is, like, I could never sleep with a man who doesn't play Nier Automata or whatever. Or let me go get a copy, you know. Like, she's just, you know, she's just, like, it's more kind of like a vague thing. And guys are, I mean, did there need to be some kind of, like, proof of purchase or something? Like, I don't know. How did she know went and bought it?
Listen, as a person who's used dating apps, I'm sure it was a thing of, oh, man, I love Nier Automata. It's my favorite game. Have you tried it out? Oh, you've not checked it out? Dude, you should totally buy it. You should totally, trust me. It'll change your life. It's
and then all
game.
The thirsty boys go and get it. Yeah.
1,000%. Yeah, they get it. And all of a sudden, they just never hear from her again. Stay safe out there, y'all. But also,
can you
Nier Automata
confirm nor deny that you only played Nier Automata because of Tinder?
Listen, Barrett. All right. The only thing that matters is that it's one of my favorite games now. It's a very incredible game. She's doing the world a great service. And so everybody should be saying thank you. Say thank you to this woman. Gary, I can't wait for the next game somebody convinces me to buy on Tinder. I play and it becomes one of my favorite games ever. But that is probably just so far away. If I want to know where I can go to find out what's coming out to Minecraft shops today, where would I look?
I'm still thinking I need like a minute to get past the Tinder thing because it's just so funny and weird. The official list of upcoming software on each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Out today, we got Kirby's Dream Buffet for Switch. Yeah. Dynabomb too. That's out for everything. Have you gotten to check out Kirby's Dream Buffet?
No, I only found out yesterday that it came out. Like late last night, I was scrolling through Apple News, and it was like I got like Kotaku or one of the websites. Oh, they just dropped it. So I'm gonna install it today. I'm excited about it. It looks like we like to play these kind of like fun little mini games with the family. It looks almost a little bit Fall Guys ish or Mario Party ish. I kind of like a mashup. I'm curious to see like what it actually is. But it's free. You know, it's looks
oh,
like something
free.
The whole. Oh, isn't it free? What
no,
is it?
I thought it was free too. I tried
is it
to
not
play
included
it last night.
Like in Switch Online or anything?
No,
I thought it was like some.
It's just an eShop game. It's $15 though.
Oh, okay. Well,
so it's not
go.
Expensive.
No, I'll pick it up because I feel like my family loves these kind of games where we can all pick up the controllers and play together. So it's a good purchase for me.
Robo Revenge Squad is also out today for Switch and Xbox. Survivor Cells is out on PC, and then Boyfriend Dungeon Secret Weapons Update is out today on all platforms for free. New dates for you. Planet of Lana or Planet of Lana has been delayed to spring 2023. Planet, is it Lana? Is that
confirmed? I was saying Lana like Archer. Lana.
Oh, Lana. Spring 2023 and will be available day one on Game Pass. What has surprised you, Barrett, that I've not seen Archer?
That does surprise me. I think that would be up your alley. That would be up your alley.
I think so too. My sister used to watch it back in the day, and she always tried to get me to watch it. But
I eventually
reason, I never
fell
got
off
it.
When they started, you know, being like drug dealers and stuff. But I really enjoyed this. They go off
Breaking
the
Bad
deep end in that show. Oh yeah, it's crazy. Damn.
Bro, Better Call Saul is so good, though. You know,
it is.
Like, I'm just blown through season three right now, and I'm like trying to stay
so
on Twitter.
For you, man.
Everybody's popping off about the finale, and I'm like, oh no, don't tell me, don't tell me. I'm fucking enjoying the show. But yeah, dude, I can't wait to continue watching it. More new dates for you. Aquadine releases August 26th on PS4, PS5, Switch, and Xbox. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening later on podcast services around the globe. Nano writes in and says, the Sam Barlow game is Immortality. I appreciate that clarification. Let's see. Kebab says every console release of a Crash Bandicoot game has been on Xbox since the 2002 port of Wrath of Cortex to the original Xbox. I don't remember us going back and forth on that, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, that feels like a long time ago. We had that. We were talking about.
Yeah, right. It feels like it was yesterday. let's see here. A lot of people writing about Crash and Spyro, but things that. Okay, a lot of people are just talking about how they're multi-platform, which I'll just take your word for it that we fucked that up, even though I don't remember fucking that up.
I think Gary asked of Crash coming to Xbox, but Crash has been on Xbox for a while.
So. That's right. Yeah, yeah. I did get that wrong. It does happen, you know. Very rarely.
Very rarely. Very rarely.
But it does happen.
You're only human, Gary.
I'm only human after all.
Nano says,
don't put the blame on me.
New Tales from the Borderlands was announced at PAX East 2022. So that was what? February, March-ish.
Jesus.
That game got announced. Wow. Yeah, right? Wild. And then War Machine writes in with a missed news slash new date from yesterday. Mia Allen is confirmed to be the next Survivor character added to the Evil Dead game in a September update. She's part of the Season 1 pass and suggests the next DLC drop may be focused on Evil Dead 2013, the reboot film, which she is from. Appreciate that, War Machine. I'm a very big fan of you from Avengers. And that is it for kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Tomorrow's hosts for the show are going to be me and the one and only Cameron Hawkins. So get hyped for that. If you're watching live on Twitch, Cam Hawkins, he's done like a lot of stuff. He's been on IGN Unlocked. He's a big Kingdom Hearts fan. Just the biggest Kingdom Hearts fan. Big old weeb of a man.
Oh,
but we love him.
Kingdom Hearts fans are the fucking worst.
Oh, I know, Gary, right? And Cam Hawkins, let me tell you, that's a Kingdom Hearts fan right there. If you want to talk about how they're the worst. But get hyped for that, of course. We're going to talk about some weeb shit tomorrow, probably. If you're watching this live on Twitch.
By the way, can I just say, I watched that video that came out. You know when they announced, what's the name of the fucking guy with the key in
Sora?
Kingdom Hearts?
Sora. Oh, Sora coming to Smash.
Sora. The main guy, the main dude.
Yeah.
When they did, so you know when they announced him for Super Smash Bros, right, it was the last character, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone thought it was never going to happen. They put up, so somebody cut together like a YouTube compilation of like all the streamers and Smash Bros fans that are out there, like live reacting to that reveal of Sora. Mm-hmm. And these people were like rending their garments and pulling their hair
out.
It's a
big deal.
Like crying.
It's a big
like
deal.
Floods of tears, like, oh my god, I can't believe it. It's like, fucking hell. I like video games as well, but fucking get a grip. These people
did you see our reaction? We're one of those people.
No, yeah, you were in there. You were in the fucking video. You were as bad as any of them.
It's a really exciting announcement. We've been wanting this since like 2002 or some shit.
Holy,
it's been a long time coming.
We're a bunch of weebs here, and you need to just weeb out with us a little bit, all right?
Weeb out with us, Gary. We've out with us.
Oh my god. It was,
but yeah,
that,
you're gonna get me and Cam tomorrow. Again, if you're watching this live on Twitch, after this is Mike and Nick playing The Cycle. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time. Game Daily.